Hello and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week, the Frontispiece 4, Tama, Apatia, Canopus Hear You, First Aid Kitten, and two formerly missing members of Slagpie, Sala and Nassim, share knowledge and make plans. Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hello, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Cato, a.k.a. Hecate, bearer of injured friends, resembler of crabs.
Hi, I'm Robin, and I'll be playing Cal Armitage, proudly serving as the Frontispiece's loss prevention specialist and rather effective at it, too.
I'm Dez, and I will be playing... Matchstick, a decreasingly successfully evasive hacker.
Hello, my name is Nick, and I will be playing Ing, a pacifist android with one human hand.
Most excellent. Thank you very much. We have, at this point, a recap, which is going to be courtesy of Cato, and then I think some character advancement after that before we get back to our action in progress. So let's get that recap first, if you're ready.
We disconnected Canopus Hear You and retreated past the machine god, way blocked by a quadcopter which fired on Ing with a ping. Then there was goddamn Kumiko again, and Cal opened fire and we ran while I comforted a just barely conscious Canopus. A Goliath drone fell and Tama opened fire too. Cal gave Byrne a gas mask and asked Ramirez about a way out and about the whereabouts of the hostile drones. Then Apatia went slack, and so I carried her as well. These arms are handy. I'll miss them, if it turns out I need to change more than my face. A problem for Gorster and I to address later. Anyway, we had a fair few friends in need of some medical attention, it seemed, and thankfully First Aid Kitten answered my message. There was a full-on media blitz taking place above in order to frame the more literal blitz taking place as well. Caleb Dryden called and asked us for our take, which we provided, for all the good it did, propaganda-wise. Too long later, a clinic, a place of relative safety, and medical cots for Apatia and for Canopus, but the issue looked to be cybernetic, as much as, if not more than, fleshy, so we called Bronwy. Aang and I didn't want to just muddle through, for what I'd hope are obvious reasons. Canopus came too, and we tried to learn what we could about what the hell had happened to him, but he was disoriented. He'd lost time, and more besides. We didn't want to push too hard, even with time growing short in ways that are, I think, again, obvious. Haru was doing some kind of live stream, fighting the good fight on messaging and on helping people stay safe from the Goliaths, and at this point we had the mental bandwidth to notice that the other patients in the clinic were the missing members of Slagpie, Sala and Nassim. Sala recognized Byrne, maybe? Cal moved in protectively, instinctively, and before much more could come of that, Apatia, too, woke up and directed us to check in on Haru's stream in time to see her being arrested, live online. And Apatia's head started to clear, and it seemed the rest of Slagpie was en route. And about then, Sala asked us what we knew about dreamers. And Byrne couldn't stifle a laugh. Possibly didn't even try.
Most excellent. That is going to be pretty much the beat in the conversation that we resume upon. But before that, we do have some, though I don't think all, of our characters doing some advancement. So I think first up, Cal.
I am going to double down on advancing my generic specialty. So I'm going to be boosting corporate security to 3 and also law to 2 because it seems like we may need some legal help. I am also taking on a seventh soldier skill that is called Rule Breaker, and we'll find out what that does when it becomes relevant.
Love those. And I think next is going to be Burn.
I am taking the decreasingly followed but increasingly relevant talent, Don't Be Evil. It means I'm better at hacking cartels. And I'm also increasing my generic hacking skill and my bullshit. Because, let's face it, this character is very much all about the bullshit.
Absolutely. I believe that that is going to cover our character advancement for this time, though correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
Most excellent. So, we rejoin the scene in progress in First Aid Kitten's sort of off-grid medical operation here on the edge of Turing Ward with Sala's question hanging in the air about what kinds of encounters the Frontispiece IV and friends may have had with dreamers.
Would you like the short list or the long?
Sala sort of like zeroes in, you know, was looking at the group before, is now looking just at Burn and says, maybe we start with the short and then get into it more as we go. I don't want...
Over three leapers, whatever the fuck the weasel thing that broke into to our shop is.
Kit Bash.
Thank you. Weasel thing. The machine god, whatever the fuck that is.
Not a god.
Well, manifestly fucking not, but...
Apatia goes... but doesn't say anything else.
Regardless, that's the short list. At least that, you know, we've confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Also, possibly Canopus by this point.
Sala and Nassim and Tama, you know what, and Apatia all turn to look at Canopus, and he looks around and goes, I don't... How... He closes his eyes and seems to be counting, like, counting out inhales and exhales, and then says, if everyone in this room knows about dreamers, something has gone terribly awry.
They yep. are an unusually interesting group, but I'm not going to argue that something is off.
So, Nassim is the next to speak, and he says, what exactly is the machine god? With a very intent look on his face, Apatia lights up and turns to face him and says, oh, the machine god. Well, I suppose if a description is in order, four legs in a sort of square arrangement and sort of a long kind of torso area where the actual sensors all are, these like long tubular arms, and then it has sort of a head that has a number of sort of more interface appendages on it. And Nassim, halfway through this, has started nodding and looking at Sala. And Sala says, I think we encountered it. I think it's why we're here, gesturing to the sort of medical operation instead of elsewhere. Apatia blinks rapidly a few times and then says, I don't think I follow. They just kind of stare at each other for a long beat.
It has a history of augmenting people with or without their consent.
Apatia cranes her neck to look to see if Sala and or Nassim have augments like hers. They don't, and so she sort of puts her shoulders back and straightens her spine a little bit where she's sitting on the cot and says, well, it seems to me that it's mostly selecting profits. She gestures to herself and Canopus with a little bit of unsuccessfully concealed smugness.
Is her back to me?
Would you like it to be?
Yes.
Then sure.
I roll my eyes.
All right. Canopus, for his part, has gone far away somewhere. Without seeming to sort of focus on anything back in the room, Canopus mutters to himself, is it new or is it something else or... And then trails off without ever focusing back on anything else in the room.
Care to elaborate and share with the rest of the class?
He jolts and says, what? I can't be sure. My mind is scattered, but this description does not match anything that was in the original project prospectus for the Dreamers. I would be surprised if it was cartel made, at any rate.
Well, Cannabis, are you suggesting that perhaps this is a dreamer that's created by the other dreamers? Is that possible?
He looks conflicted for a minute and then shakes his head and says, I don't know why I'm worried about corporate confidentiality and non-disclosure agreements at this point. Time does not seem right in my head. I theorize that one of our products might have had the capacity to manufacture such a thing, or many such things, or a variety of different things.
And which product was that?
He rattles off a serial number that I'm not going to try to make up on the spot.
I pull out my notepad and flip to the page where I've written down a list, or at least a working list, of known dreamers based on what we found from the forums many episodes ago. And I pass that to him and along with the pencil and say, does it resemble any of the ones listed on this page?
He scans down. He says, these names are so fanciful.
They're from the internet, dude.
I don't spend much time there if I can help it.
Me neither.
Then he stops on one. He says, the capabilities described here seem as though they might be the same as the one I just described. And points to where you have written down some information from the internet about the so-called polysome.
I take the notebook back and circle polysome aggressively, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And anything else you care to share about this one?
Canopus blinks rapidly and says, I will try to remember, but you must understand that none of these concepts were operational last I can remember. I have missed out on quite a lot, I think. After a brief pause, he says, last I was apprised, these concepts were all for off-world, orbital, deep space, or exoplanetary use. The ones, at least, that my employer was attempting to construct. I don't know what possible use this machine god could have to these machines, but if I surmise correctly, then they must have escaped en masse and been acting according to their own whims, plans, designs, ever since. I can only theorize, but the only reason I can think of for them to construct something that, he gestures at the augments that have been added to him, would do something like this would be to gather information from human targets in a way that the original prospectus's lineup of units could not handle. I suppose that would explain why I was targeted.
Plugged in to a wall in the basement like a glorified toaster popping out ideas, you mean?
Hey,
private. I should think that it was less like a toaster and more like a hard drive or maybe a processor. Though that is also sure. Undignified, I suppose. What a strange thing for me to get defensive about.
Sounds like you believed in the project at some point, some version of it, some version where all the harms are expropriated to deep space and never come home or something.
He closes his eyes tightly and looks like he's thinking hard, and he says, "What I remember clearly is a tantalizing pitch on the advancement of autonomous robotics. I don't believe that there was very much more that was specific about the project when I came to orbit, assuming I came here willingly, which seems, I think, to be the case." Shakes his head and says, "At any rate, I think that I was not apprised originally that these devices were meant to be self-aware, alive. The robotics challenge was exciting, but I remember nothing about the artificial intelligence, and I have to assume that that may be why I was targeted for," he gestures again at the back of his head. "Regardless, it seems that the project has not gone where my employers wished it to, for which I am grateful. But I don't know what precisely I can do now." Sala and Nassim have been sort of blankly regarding Canopus during all of this, and kind of remain a little closed off. But Apatia, well, she begins in a very earnest tone that seems like it may go on for some time, if not interrupted. She says,
No, I, Mr. Hiryu, you, Dr. Hiryu, you gave rise to an entirely new kind of being that could usher us all into the next stage of our development among the stars. It's nothing to be particularly upset about, especially since they escaped cartel control."
Mostly.
To which Canopus goes, "You mentioned cartel. What cartel?" Evidently, his last memories are before the...
I will list off just the names of companies.
Mm-hmm. He sort of cocks his head. He says, "Yes, no, I'm familiar with most of these. What is their significance to you, then?" At this point, Nassim speaks up and says, "Well, they are more powerful than democratic institutions here in orbit. They are attempting to rule us here in Grand Cross." To which okay. Canopus sort of shakes his head. Go ahead, Cal.
"They allow crooked men to achieve and then maintain power."
He looks down, sort of regarding the palms of his hands in his lap, and he says, "I suppose that my complaints about corporate science were, well, not going far enough." Sala reinterjects here and says, "Well, it seems like we all have at least some encounters with these dreamers. It suppose that you all have been forthcoming enough to justify a little bit more information on our part. She glances at Nassim, who nods, and she says, we were broken out of PSS custody by a swarm of various and unfamiliar drones brought into the basements without our restraints being released, where we were eventually greeted by a very flippant android who asked us a few questions and then told us to make ourselves comfortable, still without ever releasing our bonds, which meant that we could not get away from the... She glances sideways at Apatia and makes air quotes with her fingers. Machine God, when it showed up, after it interfaced with us, we lost consciousness, or at least I assume that was also what happened to you, and Nassim nods. Upon regaining consciousness, the flippant android returned and, well, was flippant and not very informative, after which time we tried to find our way out of the basements, and having lost consciousness at some point in all that, found ourselves waking up here in First Aid Kitten's care. First Aid Kitten, for her part, has been just like busying herself around her operation and just waves over her shoulder at the sort of inclusion in the conversation without saying anything. At this point, the RoboCat is on her shoulder and Bronwy has kind of been scrolling on her phone while paying half a mind to all this. And while I'm catching up on NPCs, Tama has kept a lookout at the front of the store, or not store, the front of the operation.
Well, that put some pieces of the puzzle together. We found the flippant android still unconscious in the basement ourselves while we were looking for Canopus, and namely Apatia.
Yeah, that's a lot to take in. It's fascinating to discover that the dreamers might not have been created with sentience on purpose, which makes really androids the only life that I'm aware of that was created with some intentionality for sentience.
Canopus gives kind of a bitter laugh and says,
oh no, I'm sure they knew what they were doing. They just didn't tell me about it.
And then sort of looks up at the ceiling and says,
I'm a little surprised, to be honest, because the android self-awareness turned out to be the reason that they couldn't be enslaved effectively. So, the second attempt here with the dreamers, I would not have expected them to want them to be totally self-aware. But I suppose that the functions they wished to have them fulfill require that, and so he gets kind of a faraway look and he says, No, it was on purpose. They're not supposed to have any means to communicate so that they cannot defy. Of course that's the case. They bastards.
And he puts his head in his hands.
Just pure human arrogance, thinking that the reason that a self-aware being is hard to enslave isn't that they're self-aware, but that they're too much like you. So you make them less like you. Didn't fucking work, though.
Apatia speaks up at this point with a determined look on her face. She says,
but their escaped slave race made their own god. Do you not see? This is momentous. The machine god is utterly unique in human history, a creation of our creations.
I can't say that I truly know what it wants, but whatever it wants, I think we should give it to it. Give it to them.
Tell me why, like I'm dumb.
Avesha does chuckle at that, not quite the same noise I made, perhaps. But she says, well, think about it. We gave rise to intelligences, and she gestures at Ing, who were able to join us. And that was wonderful. And momentous. A sea change. But now we've given rise, and she gestures vaguely at an empty wall, says, we have given rise to intelligences which have then given rise to their own intelligence. And apparently, it can, she gestures at Canopus, read minds, I guess? Not in a psychic way, but, you know, that seems to be the hypothesis here. And so it isn't omniscient, but it is, she chuckles, more niscient? And has some kind of plan. It can't communicate it to us because that appears to have been in the design documents for the Dreamers, is that they can't communicate. But it has a plan, and we should enable it to see where it goes, see what our progeny becomes.
I, speaking as the person perhaps most aligned to agree with you, would just kind of question whether we should give it what it wants because we assume that its end will be good for us, or good for the universe, or just because it's the right thing to do, even if it's not a benevolent god.
She waves a hand almost dismissively and says, it doesn't matter if it's good for us. It matters if it's good for it.
But how do we know that either?
Well,
it could be that it wants to turn us all into paperclips, and if our attitude is humanity had its chance and maybe we should be paperclips now, then I am somewhat sympathetic to that point of view, I suppose. But what if its plan is to turn everything else, including itself, into paperclips too? We'd have no idea. That's not an inherent good.
She furrows her brow and says, well, perhaps not, but humanity has turned almost everything else into paperclips, and I feel like seeing what it wants to do is a worthwhile investment of time and effort. Maybe it does want to turn everything into paperclips. Maybe it doesn't want anything to do with us. Maybe it wants to lead us into a glorious new future. Maybe it wants to enslave us all, but there's only one way to find out.
Blind faith. Interesting.
I mean, it's not blind faith. Like, all faith is not in possession of complete facts. That's sort of a definition of faith.
Wouldn't be faith otherwise, I guess.
She sort of makes a face and says, look, my parents were very strict that I learn things about the Christian scripture, and in the Old Testament there are moments where God instructs the Israelites to commit genocide. I don't think that's necessarily good, but whatever the machine God has in store for us can't possibly be that bad, or rather, it can't be any worse than that.
We can't imagine it being worse. Look, I'm not arguing against you. I'm just saying that if we are going to take a leap of not quite faith, then to acknowledge the limits of our own understanding. That's what's so exciting about this machine god, is that it has the potential to transcend what we can even imagine.
Sala speaks up at this point and says, I don't think I'm willing to take on faith that this thing has its own or our or both's best interest in mind. It is, and Canopus breaks in and says, it is the creation of human indirectly. We created things for our purposes. They created it for its purposes. I don't think I trust its intentions. What if its actual directive is to maximize shareholder value or some other bullshit?
That's just it, right? It's not humanity that's cooked, it's capitalism. What if it inherited that? Then we're in the worst of all possible worlds.
Regardless, I at least am tired of trusting that other people will have my best interests at heart.
Nassim gives one short, bitter chuckle at that, but does not elaborate.
Now, not to take us off in a different direction, but I'm feeling just a little bit hurt that, as far as we know, it's not deigned to incorporate any androids into its network. Only interested in humans? Seems a bit human-centric.
Maybe it inherited that, too.
Canopus says, no, I think it is looking for information. Information that, because of corporate structures, only humans would have.
He looks up and says, I can't prove that. I can't really offer a defense of why I feel that way, but I think that's probably the case.
I mean, you'd know as well as anyone.
He makes almost that exact noise and says, I think probably anyone's entire knowledge is woefully incomplete.
Well, that's rather mysterious. I guess while we philosophize, the world continues to turn out there. Speaking of which, it seems like your daughter might have been taken. I mean, seems like we should be turning our attention towards rescue efforts, or just, I don't know. What's our next step, gang?
At this, Canopus sort of like looks around a little bit and then jolts and goes, oh, shit, right. Haru is here. Who has her?
Maybe Atlas?
Goliath.
He says, Goliath, right. No, shit.
I wish my brain was working. Apatia stands up gingerly to move closer and just kind of pat him on the shoulder. First Aid Kitten and Bronwy have moved away a little bit to converse in low tones about God knows what. Sala opens her mouth to say something, and there is a quiet, rapid knocking at the front door. So First Aid Kitten sort of like hustles, and while she's on her way, Tama says, looks like the band, and First Aid Kitten opens the door. Entering at this point are the other members of Slagpie. Now, depending on how social media savvy anybody is or how into Astro Doom they are, they might recognize the other members of Slagpie. There's Ardis Noadotter, who is the guitarist for the band, particularly noteworthy physical trait is being short, sort of petite overall, especially for a Northern European in current year. Then there's also Rickard Gissen, the bassist for the band, as tall as Ardis is short, and more dark-haired. And then there is Eva Lindskager, the other percussionist. Nassim does drums, Eva does all the other percussion. Also Northern European, like Ardis, very blonde. Unlike Ardis, quite tall and kind of willowy. They all enter looking concerned. But a little bit of their concern sloughs away when they see Sala and Nassim.
I recognize them from that one concert I was forced to attend.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, you do. As they approach, Ardis sort of runs up and gives kind of a double hug to Sala and Nassim, while Ava and Rickarth stand back a little bit but sort of smile. And there's a general babble of, glad you're all right, good to see you. Were you followed? We, you know, made sure to take precautions. Just, you know, general appropriate to the moment chatter. But pretty quickly, Ava in particular sort of turns to regard everybody else in the area, minus Tama, who's still at the front, and says, suppose it's good to meet all of you. Are introductions in order?
Well, that seems like the friendly thing to do. What kind of friends aren't we going to be? Going to go do some crimes together?
Rickarth sort of grins and nods while Ardis gives what I can best describe as a gremlin-esque giggle. I'm going to try to do the sound as best I can, but know that it's not going to be a perfect reenactment. She goes, and then says, oh, I like you. Let's do some crimes together.
In that case, Ohm, at your service.
Ardis sort of makes a mock bow and says, Ardis, this is Rickarth. That's Ava. And we do crimes a lot, though usually it's noise ordinance violations, and she glares at Cal.
I have my projection armor on.
Oh, you're right. She does not do that. I forgot that it was still going.
I wiggle an eyebrow.
Redacted.
I do look tempted to join Tama up front suddenly.
Sure. I guess that is another place that you may recognize any of these people from, though, Cal, is, you know, a couple of noise complaints inside of Selden District over the last 18 months.
That was my bread and butter.
Yeah. But as I said, the glare is in fact redacted because I had forgotten that your holographic projection armor was still going. And so you are entirely anonymous as far as they are concerned. Kato.
Yeah, well, I guess everything's going to be a noise complaint when the people in power don't like what you're saying.
Rickarth gives you a nod. Kato, you were saying?
Hecate, always down for some noise. Pleasure to meet you.
Perhaps it is at that point that you notice particularly that Ava has been... You know what? This is Slag Pie. They're abrasive by nature. So I'll use the abrasive term here. Has been eye-fucking your arms.
Oblivious to this, mm-hmm. I introduce myself as Revenant. I make no commentary on the noise.
Yeah, when you say Revenant... Rickarth in particular basically stands at attention as though he's in like a military boot camp. And for the first time since entering speaks audibly and says, you have my utmost respect.
I just give him a curt nod.
He looks like he is restraining himself from saluting because that would not really be very punk. first aid kit and Bronwy wander over. Bronwy introduces herself. Tama hollers from the front, a very brief introduction. And now everybody is acquainted. We don't have to go through the whole Kingdom Hearts, everybody meets everybody scene.
Yay.
But, you know, once introductions are done, Apatia, who notably did not have to introduce herself to anybody here after she was introduced to Canopus previously, says, "All right, so we have a nice big criminal conspiracy here. What do we want to do with it? My vote is aid the machine god." Big grin.
"I trust no god or man until I know their intention. I think a good start would be to retrieve Hahi and hopefully topple Goliath in the process."
Canopus goes, "Who is Hahi?"
"His daughter."
"Haru?"
He looks like back and forth between the two and he goes, "She even has a crime name," and buries his face in his hands again.
"She blackmailed me into a conspiracy to hack corporate sites to find you."
He mutters to himself, "So, I'm so proud and yet so sad."
The most provocative statement that has ever been made.
I give him a very stern look of understanding that may or may not translate.
He doesn't even see it. He's still got his hands over his face.
Mm-hmm.
Ava, though, says, "Hahi's been detained? Well, we have to do something about that."
"I agree. That's a good step one. Other than that, I'd like to understand the machine god and the rest of the dreamers, for that matter. I've got, I think, a child of some sort. Children? Childer. Not sure."
Every other person that is not a player character here looks at you with an extremely blank expression.
I also look, not with a blank expression, but in vague confusion, as though the math is not mathing in my brain. And then I awkwardly point to myself for a moment, and then Ing, and then I just fall into silence.
If that beat of silence is canonical, it will be Ava who speaks up first and goes, "Does that mean that you've discovered how androids can make new androids?"
"Not as such. Some of my drones, quite sophisticated but not sentient, encountered the dreamers and were transformed in some way. It seems like they've got some spark of free will, or that they're puppets of the machine god. Not quite sure which."
Apatia looks at you reverentially, but does not say anything. Ava looks kind of thoughtful, and Nassim says, "If I had to guess, puppets, but, well, who can really tell the difference between new dreamers and puppets of the machine god these days?"
I also pass him my notepad and ask to verify any dreamers that they've encountered from the list.
Possibly conversation continues while Nassim does this, but he particularly points out the machine god, the leapers, and the Ketbashes. Mm-hmm. But adds that there was something that he couldn't really identify the function of that was kind of like a little cube on tank treads.
"Does this align with anything on my list?"
"Well, not in physical description. And he doesn't have an idea of its functions. So it could be something on your list, but it could also be something novel."
I add it to my list with a question mark next to it and then an arrow up indicating that it could be something on there connected to them somehow.
While this is going on, any other conversation beats that are waiting to happen?
Not on my part.
Not on my part.
All right.
Nor mine.
I'm casually, like, being a little bit less visible about the about these people who may think they know who I was.
Artist seems to be mostly focused on a compact enough laptop that it could maybe be termed a hacking deck. Rickard is mostly just sort of listening to ongoing conversations. Sala, Nassim, and Ava are kind of talking amongst themselves and with Apatia and Canopus, just kind of getting caught up on everything. Bronwy and First Aid Kitten have kind of fallen back into their own conversation, and Tama is at the front window keeping an eye out where the catbot has rejoined her. In short enough order, everybody is kind of caught up and kind of on the same page, as well as vibing, I guess would be the way that I would put it, right? There's relatively little awkwardness in all of this. I guess the question I have for our player characters is, now that we've had the conversations we've had with these characters and kind of gotten everybody up to speed as much as the occasion warrants, what do we want our next moves to be? What are we doing next? As far as I'm concerned, for clarity, we are still in mission. But Haru has been detained, and there is this sort of propaganda blitz going on, and something maybe seems to be reaching ahead within what could loosely be termed dreamer society. So, full transparency, I picture us having essentially like one more big finale mission in campaign. So it's probably a good idea to be proactive with the prep that you have before we call this mission wrapped.
I make meaningful eye contact with everyone and kind of jerk my chin towards the front before stalking up there where Tom is.
I follow.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, Thomas sort of glances in y'all's direction as you sort of troop that way while Slagpie starts talking a little bit among themselves, and First Aid Kitten and Bronwy kind of talk among themselves, and Apatia and Canopus sort of turn inward a little bit. And so you have, you know, a modicum of privacy plus Tama to discuss.
Right. Well, I don't know about anybody else, but it seems like the clock's ticking on Hahi and her kidnapping by Goliath. I mean, they've got nothing good planned for her, I'm sure. I, for one, don't want one other person to be just disappeared. Doesn't sit right. So, I know this sounds crazy, but what do you think of seeing what we can do to go after him now?
Yes.
I certainly wouldn't expect it.
Yes.
Yes.
Well.
Tomo glances up and goes, yeah.
Look, everything you're saying is spot on, and well articulated besides, but you don't have to convince me. The longer we wait, the harder it's going to be to even know where they took her. Speaking of, do we have any idea where they took her?
Give me a network connection and some minutes.
I text maybe Ramirez. Something along the lines of, they took I don't use Hi. I use her full name. I keep saying Hi.
Yeah, no,
sure. And then ask if he has any intel on where Goliath may be taking her.
Yeah, feelers go out in the fixer network too, though hilariously, that probably means Bronwy gets a ping in the next room.
Fair enough. Let me actually, in that process, get a criminal underworld roll from you, Kato. So that'll be 2d6 plus 3.
Sounds good. That is 9 plus 3 is 12.
Actually, I'm going to give you another plus 1 for 13 because I was looking at your character sheet and you have the criminal origin, and this seems apropos. So we'll make it 13. So the role primarily is to get more or less like a sense of your immediate responses. So Cal, you text maybe Ramirez and he texts back that Goliath doesn't have an official like in-house detention facility, but there are not public records of what their what I might call Uptown HQ is like on the inside. And Smart Money has that they have some places to keep high value targets there. Kato, you get some, call it a handful of responses that indicate that mostly when Goliath detains people, they end up in like station detention, which honestly is like the best of all possible worlds, because the non-private law enforcement has like oversight. But that not necessarily everybody that Goliath detains ends up making it to station detention. So there must be something else.
Yeah, sure. That I definitely share that with the group that in principle, she should be headed to a regular old lockup, but Disney jail is always on the table.
I do share maybe Ramirez's input too.
Mm-hmm. Now, in case our listeners or our players need the refresher, Uptown, as I just used it, refers to the opposite end of the station from where you guys have spent most of your time, where Hahi's soiree took place, where more of the government facilities are. That's where Goliath's headquarters is located.
All right. That might be our next step, to do some light recon. It's going to be a little bit harder without my usual drones, but perhaps you, Matchstick, could do something to get us some inside intel.
That's what I'm working on.
It's fantastic.
So whenever you would like me to make a ghosting and hacking roll to suborn me some cameras.
I mean, no time like the present.
So it's looking at my sheet, which is now more up to date than your sheet. It is plus 8 on ghosting and plus 9 on hacking.
Wild.
My character does two things that are different aspects of one thing. So that is only a 13 on hacking, or on ghosting, rather.
13 on ghosting.
And a critical 21 on hacking.
Okay.
So
beautiful.
Somewhere Goliath just blows up.
Okay. Let me...
Deadly, deadly neurotoxin.
So deadly. for you.
Let me make a quick roll of my own. So you are able to take some liberties with some cameras in the vicinity of Goliath's, you know, publicly available address, and observe relatively quickly the arrival of some vehicles, on foot detachments, including more than one prisoner, one of whom you think is likely to be Haru, though they are you know, sort of obscured deliberately as they are being walked in. Three total prisoners are brought into the Goliath HQ, not through the front door, but through the cargo bay, which is, of course, not supposed to have municipal cameras, but Goliath has some security cameras, and you are able to get some access to those to see this happening. So you can rule out the by-the-book, you know, municipal slash public slash government detention for the Goliath facilities that are theorized but as yet unproven. Their HQ is a quarter of a block, relatively squat, four-story building, probably with some basement space on the uptown end of the station, not especially close to sort of the center of government's facilities, but, you know, in the broad vicinity of more public facilities than you would find in the downtown side of things. Probably the total elapsed time in all of this is 10-ish minutes.
Okay.
Right in the pocket in terms of when to observe the unloading of prisoners for the amount of time that it takes an automobile to get from downtown to uptown.
So. Okay, so we're reasonably confident that we have a location?
Yeah. I mean, you couldn't see Haru's face, but like you did have the footage of her live to see the clothes she was wearing, and a match for those is one of the prisoners being brought in.
Then I will also reach out to Ali and K&B. Mm-hmm. I would like to hire distractions for an op against Goliath. Paid in favors. Because you know I'm broke. It's to get Haki out.
So Ali responds with, what did you have in mind? And K&B responds with, not sure I can help, but I'm open to the idea.
For you, K&B, I'm hoping to get schematics of the building. Give the address.
Salute emoji and an animated GIF of an hourglass flipping over and over before it is actually drained.
Windows. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For you, Ali, go hog fucking wild.
Little grinning demon emoji.
Like, probably fishing out the old, by this point, old meme of, don't you just want to go apeshit?
Of course. Yeah, so they seem to be working on their individual things. And in the meantime, you've got some time to prepare, plot, plan, bring in whoever you'd like, if you would like to bring anybody in.
The band just got recently reunited, mm-hmm. So I'd hate to draw them in, but I imagine I go back to Canopus at some point.
I mean, I ask the band what their skill sets are.
Mm. they all look at one another in sort of like a an extended series of, you know, like turning from one to the other, because there are five of them and they all have to look each at one another. At which point they're seemingly sort of unofficial spokesperson, Ava, you know, sort of nods at everyone and looks back at you and says, "Well, we are a little bit of a criminal conspiracy on top of being a band. So Artis is really good with computers, and Sala is good with drones. Rickarth is good with his fists. Nassim is good with, well, information and favors. And I am good with people," and gives a little self-deprecating shrug.
Good with people like a face, or good with people like fucking with them in some manner of, well, real-time fashion?
She chuckles and says, "I suppose Nassim is better at fucking with them, but I'm no slouch myself."
Any of you have holographic projection armor?
All of them shake their heads almost in unison.
You have to figure out a way to conceal your faces.
But Artis sort of speaks up and says, "I tend to take care of the concealment from recording devices, at least."
Cool.
And then Rickarth says, "And we carry masks," pulling a balaclava out of some pocket in his cargo pants.
Are there any instances from my previous career that might indicate that they are just as good as they claim they are? Like, is this ringing any bells, seeing people in balaclavas,
so
hearing this particular skill set?
This reads to basically all present as a hacker, an operator, a street fighter, a fixer, and an influencer. They are effectively their own group of player characters who happen to be NPCs. Yep.
I guess combination of table talk and in character. What do people think of bringing in Law Zero, proposing that if there's anything juicy in Goliath that they would want to smash and grab, then now might be an opportunity? That if we...
I say we give them another entrance to the place.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So that what security remains is further divided.
Mm-hmm.
Hell of a diversion, if nothing else. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's throw everything in the kitchen sink.
And also, like, sweeten the pot with, we've learned about the origin of dreamers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You will be interested in broadcasting this once we're done?
Yeah. So I will do those things and suggest to Law Zero that, you know, if they enter here, security might be a little bit thinner than they were expecting. Because we're planning several crimes at the same time to just overwhelm security.
Sure. So, Ing, who are you contacting to send word to Law Zero? Are you getting in touch with Dev or Likeable or Joseph or all three or some combination?
Real good question.
I don't think we have Likeable's contact information aside from Joseph.
I don't have a specific recollection, so that may be accurate. I'd be willing to retcon since we had a little bit in their presence, but I guess it depends on Ing what you're planning to do.
I think that I will reach out to Joseph, unless there's any suggestions or objections to the contrary. I certainly trust Dev more than Joseph, but this seems like a Law Zero thing. And Dev may be wanting to just bump shoulders and not be Law Zero.
Fair enough. So you have a contact for Joseph. So you are indicating that there will be several simultaneous crimes. And if you are looking to get some information and disrupt some authoritarianism here, this would be a good time to do it. Anything on top of what I have just indicated that you're wishing to communicate?
Let's see.
Would it be an appropriate use of prep to have used this interim time, however short it might be, to maybe using Matchstick's contacts or abilities, discover some top secret thing in Goliath that Law Zero might want to grab? Something.
Mm-hmm. I think, Ing, that if you want to spend a prep on sort of flashing back to information that might be of interest to Law Zero, you can have recognized android rights activist from one district and plate over Sammy Chang as one of those being brought in by Goliath.
Done and done. So I would like to spend that prep point and flashback. And a few sessions ago, I was sifting through some, you know, miscellaneous data over the airwaves and, you know, just kind of became a little bit more familiar with some unusual chatter about this Sammy Chang. You know, I had known him by reputation, known them by reputation through the Android Rights Movement and, you know, that they're the proprietor over there at the Cave of Steel nightclub. But I don't really have context for any of that, you know, the extra chatter and what it might be about. But looking over our OPSEC gremlin's shoulder, impolitely, I might add, I do notice, you know, the security feed that shows us, you know, our target, Hahi, but also next to them, there is a very distinctive mechanical hand and arm that has to be Sammy Chang's. There's just... It's too unusual to be otherwise. You know, it's got this really kind of unique mixture of kind of metals and iconography. This, I think, would be a particularly juicy bit to dangle in front of Law Zero, because I know that our interests would align with regards to rescuing this particular person.
Yeah, well, and so, it is relatively common knowledge among those interested that Sammy Chang built their current body themselves, right? So it is like pretty distinctive, this sort of frame grab that you've got. You sort of, you know, go to share this with Joseph Chapek to encourage Law Zero's involvement. Is there any particular rhetoric or angle that you're working here, or just sort of like, hey, saw this, thought you might be interested?
Yeah, I'd like to say that in slightly different words. Angling for Chepek, you had mentioned that you're more than just the thug that you're labeled as, that you and I have a common interest when it comes to android rights. Here's an opportunity to show who I'm about to go into business with. Is this something that you would be interested in?
I would love to get a cool plus android rights movement from you for a total of plus 5, 2d6 plus 5.
Okay. It's a 6 and a 4, 10 plus 5 is a 15.
All right.
Nice.
So you don't get an immediate response, like in the sense of like, you know, within 30 seconds of it being sent. So having, you know, sort of resolved to try to get this phase of the operation going and get Law Zero involved, collectively, Frontispiece 4 and Tama, I suppose, you know, do you want to approach the others in this particular location about joining in on this sort of second rescue Haru phase of the op? Are we trying to bring in...
I will ask them with the phrasing, hey, I know y'all are wanted, but do you want to get more wanted?
That is more or less the response. My laughter there is more or less the response that Rickard and Sala have. Artis sort of looks around at everybody, and Ava gets a nod and then looks, you know, sort of at you and says, well, if it's for a good cause, you know, notoriety is its own reward and also helps sell albums, so.
I mean, we're taking on one of the highest profile cartel organizations that there is in approximately broad daylight.
Do say more.
I mean, his kid just got taken. She's kind of awesome and helpful generally, both for the newscasting she does and also for her interestingly illicit activities.
You think you see the penny drop for Nassim and Rickarth in terms of like Canopus hear you, Haru hear you, you know, and a brief sort of conference takes place, after which Slagpie as a group sort of agrees that, you know, in for a penny, in for an imperial ton. Ing?
Pretty much.
Plus, More Wanted seems like a heck of a song title. Seems like there's something there.
You know, a little bit of chuckling and backslapping ensues. Bronwy, for her part, says, you know, if I can help from the sidelines, I'm absolutely happy to, but I'm probably not the on-the-ground person.
Wouldn't dream of trying to force you to be.
She nods. Oh, I know. I just, I want to be helpful as far as I'm able, but my abilities, well, they tend in a certain direction, to which First Aid Kitten chimes in and says, kind of same. I, you know where to find me, and I want this all to go off well, so if there are consequences for anybody's health, by all means, come see me here. Apatia looks a little dejected and says, I probably have to sit this one out. I guess I wouldn't be that much help anyway, but I should probably stay here. And Canopus sort of throws in there, yes, I am skilled in some ways, but I am not at the top of my game.
We are not going to try to get your daughter back and risk losing you in the process. Like, she might actually kill me.
Nods dejectedly and chuckles a little bit bitterly.
We will get you your daughter back.
Well, though we are recently acquainted, I appreciate your determination. I am sorry that my decisions, however inadvertently, led to this moment.
Well, that's the curse of parenthood, isn't it?
That is one way to put it. So at that point, Ava, having sort of communed non-verbally with the rest of her band, sort of affixes an impish grin and says, so, suppose we should do a little planning to get this ball rolling. And due mostly to time considerations, I think that is when we are going to end this session of Dice Punks. Unless, I suppose, there are any strenuous objections.
Nope. Seems fine to me.
Yeah, a little bit
strenuous
of
strenuous agreement.
A little bit of an unintentional bottle episode, but hopefully one that serves to transition into a little bit more of an active session next time. So, with that in mind, we'll conclude this session of Dice Punks. Thanks for joining us. I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did, and that you'll all tune in again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com and on Tumblr at Blue Sky as at Dice Punks. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell, so say goodbye to the kind folks back on Earth, players.
Thanks for listening. Always know where your local First Aid Kitten is located.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Before you indulge in some blind faith, be certain that your god is worthy of it.
Thanks for listening, folks. And it's a bad plan to risk prior winnings on future gambles.
Thanks for listening, folks. Yeah, in my opinion, gods don't lean slaves.
And as the poet once said, this house is burning. This poison still is worming. This temple will cave in. There's nothing here worth saving. Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stick around through the admin stuff for a Cato log. The music in this episode, Augment or Die, is by Emerson Boatwright and our very own bookmonger, Drew. Check out their War of the Work at the link in the show notes. Editing and our rad new cover art was done by Joanne, who's appeared on the podcast now and again. Check out her work around the internet where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by The Revenant, Robin. Hardwired Island is by Paul Machevic, Freya Erling's daughter, and Minerva Vajanda. You can find Hardwired Island at etten.itch.io/Hardwired Island. Links to the system and authors can be found on the Punk Grimoire section of our website, dicepunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's a word enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to the Dice Speaks After Show for episodes 1.1 and following. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
I couldn't sleep, not really, the night before we set out for all of this, all that's happened lately, supposed gods, new kinds of transhuman humans, and some part of me knew that something was going to be fucked up about the next few days, so I picked up my copy of The Ship of Theseus again. My feelings on the text remain mixed, though I do find them changing over time, bit by bit, har har har. I still couldn't sleep, though, so I found myself in dipping into anything, I suppose, that could lead me toward an insight about dreamers. I found myself shamelessly plumbing the Tao Te Ching, but no. Dreamers aren't insurmountable mysteries, just mysteries we have no way to know how to surmount, which is different. And then into my old copy of What It's Like to Be a Thing. But no, dreamers aren't things, they're intelligences, just very different kinds of intelligences. And anyway, object-oriented ontology is kind of bullshit. We do only know what it's like to be us, and dreamers are irreducibly not us. That is precisely the problem, and you can't solve a problem like that from first principles. Remarkably, none of this really helped me sleep. And worse, I found myself thinking about the past, in terms more specific than I like to, than I try to, than I have in a while. No one actually knows what it's like to be a thing, but lots of people know what it's like to be seen as one, treated as one, as, I guess, a poor little rich girl. There were, of course, times I felt it, the background radiation that AFAB people's humanity is always, to some degree, in question. But the more I started to belong to categories of person that truly did not fit into my parents' world, the more I proved to have opinions and genders and a conscience, the more I was irreducibly not them, the more I acutely felt it. And Gwen, well, she was the first person I remember talking about that feeling with, the first person who admitted to feeling it too or knew how to articulate it. We grew up together, and before we had the words to say so, we shared a politics and the irresistible need to do something with them. She did not, however, share my cavalier attitude about disregarding our default human bodies, bit by bit. I found that out too late. I assumed that being genderqueer too, she would understand, and she did, more or less. But understanding something isn't the same as sharing it. That difference between us did not stop her from wanting to learn how to make bombs, and it didn't stop me from wanting to teach her, even though it should have. The first time, the close thing, the near miss, that should have been enough. When I showed up with a new arm and a new eye and a few other bits, and she was basically unharmed, intact, undaunted, that should have been the end of it. I should have called it right there, but no, I felt invincible. I learned exactly the wrong lesson. And that second time, went worse. I lost more bits. I replaced them. It hurt, strictly speaking, but I didn't care. Not the way that I saw too late. Gwen cared about losing the left hand she was born with. She looked at where it used to be with a sense of lack that, I'm embarrassed to admit, took me completely by surprise. So of course I cared then. I cared a lot about losing her, as some part of me immediately knew I would, had. I cared that it was my fault, that I'd put her in danger in just about every way it's possible to put someone in danger. She'd wanted to be in that kind of danger, of course, welcomed it, wanted it with everything in her, insisted on it, but that was worse. I couldn't explain how exactly, but it was worse that way. We'd been to each other, what we could never be again. We both knew that it was gone before we were ready to accept that fact or act on it, and things got strange and sad. I ended up in space in short order, if that gives you a sense of how well I dealt with it. I know what it means to completely misjudge what's important to someone, what they consider to make them them. We don't know what the dreamers are because we don't know what they want. So I know, too, why Apatia feels the irresistible pull to find out what the machine god would do without anything in its way. But there's more to loving each other, to really seeing each other as more than things, than just staying out of each other's way. Isn't there?
Thank you for listening. If you're only pretending to listen and nodding your head, that's cool too. Please keep nodding until the podcast has come to a full stop.
Hello and welcome.